In this episode of The Critical Myth, the Critical Myth crew notes some improvement with True Blood, drags through the mire with Falling Skies, takes an odd turn with The Last Ship, and covers a few quick hits along the way. It's episode 469, Echoing Galactica.
That's right, we are back with episode 469 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Edmund from Greenville, and I really wouldn't mind shows borrowing actors and even locales from Strike Back, except it keeps reminding me about Sullivan Stapleton falling out of a tuk-tuk.
This is Gary from Jacksonville, and, you know, cruise ships don't really seem that much fun after watching a few episodes.
It's been a couple weeks, folks, unless you were not unaware of that fact, that since we've been able to get together to really cover some of this stuff. So who even knows if the things that we're referring to here in the opening are going to be the things that we talk about in the episode. It's just that kind of situation. Well, speaking of, we have been out of touch for a couple weeks here, as we've been kind of off on various things. I was on vacation and out of town, which was the reason why we couldn't record last time. But yeah, we're in the midst of an interesting summer schedule. And what do you guys think so far? Anything exciting going on in the interim?
Well, my reaction so far has been that, some of the shows I discovered last summer are holding my interest, but the freshman crop is having a slightly tougher time of it.
Mm. That's true, I suppose. How about you, Gary?
I'm finding myself really bored with most of the summer's fare, which is disappointing, because last year I felt like I was much more captivated and looking forward to episodes. Now it almost seems more of a checkoff list for me.
Yeah, some shows do feel that way right now, which is kind of odd, but just to remind everybody, when we find ourselves in that situation, we're not going to force ourselves to necessarily talk in depth about something. We're just going to go ahead and move on to something a little more interesting, but we are going to at least check in on various episodes of shows and at least let you know what we thought of them in general, if not in great detail. I just had a couple things that I thought I would bring up at the top, I suppose, shaking things up slightly. I did get to go out to see a movie, which I haven't really been able to do in a little while, and I just enjoyed it so much I thought I'd mention it now, and that was Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Or Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Sorry about that. I actually watched one right before the other. Surprisingly good and strong on the social commentary, which I wasn't really expecting. But I came out of it very positive. I don't know if either one of you had a chance to see this movie.
No, I did discover the first one on cable and found it surprisingly good. So it is on my list, but I haven't made it there yet.
Hmm. How about you, Gary?
I didn't want to see any damn Dirty Apes, okay? actually, I went and saw Lucy instead.
Really? And what were your thoughts on that?
It was a very non-American film. I don't mean that bad. I don't mean that good. I just mean that's the way it is. It was directed by Luc Besson, and it was a very I enjoyed the movie, but it was not your typical American action fare. It was a little bit more cerebral, no pun intended, given their talk about brain power and things like that. But it was more of a thinking movie as it was part Kill Bill. So.
Okay. Yeah, it's hard to really get a gauge for it from the promos, and I've heard a lot of mixed stuff.
Yeah, the promos really Americanize it, and I was taken by the fact that this was not written for an American audience, which isn't bad, but it was unexpected given the promos I had seen.
Yeah, I vaguely recall that, you know, a more infamous movie from Luc Besson that people really know in the genre, The Fifth Element, had a lot of the same reaction, where there were a lot of people that said it was too European in its approach, which...
I think you'll get the same complaints then, but yeah. I enjoyed it. It was different. It was something, you know, it might not have been something you would have ordered, but at the same time, when it was served to you, you'd enjoy it, so...
Yeah. Well, there you go. A few movie recommendations. All right. Well, I'm sure that we'll touch on a few other things as we go throughout the week. But I guess it's time then for Edmund to give his most infamous part of any episode, and that is the disclaimer.
Absolutely. When we do wish to go into detail on something, we are going to discuss just about anything that might have happened in that episode. So this is your big warning that you will be spoiled if we like something a lot. But in this case in particular, we've left quite a bit of time before we've done that, so there really isn't that much on, so you've probably caught up anyway.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, as usual, what we're going to do is go ahead and let someone make the first choice out of the list of shows that we have here. And a lot of these shows, we have two episodes to talk about because, again, it has been a couple of weeks since we've recorded. So, Gary, why don't you go ahead and get us started off? What would you like to kick off with?
I would like to kick off with True Blood.
All right. Well, let's go ahead then and run the first promo.
When we descend tonight, we're going to be badly outnumbered.
Then why are you doing it?
Because I owe you everything.
You're not healing because you're not eating.
Don't walk out on me, James!
I'm protecting you and your family from what you're about to do. Turn around.
Time for a taste.
Eric?
You should be scared. We're gonna make it.
All right, and if you could do the recap, please.
Absolutely. We're talking about Season 7, Episode 4, Death is Not the End. Sookie tracks down H-Vamps with a posse of vampires and humans. Jason and Sam are tasked with delivering more bad news. Pam recalls how she and Eric came to Fantasia. Bill and Jessica find unexpected sources of nourishment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, Nadim gave this one an 8.5. What would you give it?
I'll go with the 8.5 just for the Pam and Eric flashbacks.
Yeah, I'd probably stick with just an 8, but for much the same reason. I think that you put your finger right on it. The thing that elevated this above the three episodes that came before it this season had to be those Pam and Eric moments. And I also have to say that the confrontation at the end of the episode, while remarkably short considering the build-up to it, was kind of satisfying, if only because it finally got rid of one of the more annoying subplots, which was this whole band of H-Vamps or whatever, Hep-V-Vamps, whatever they're called. But that finally got more or less resolved. But what else would you say about this particular episode? I mean, yeah, we did have those really good Pam and Eric moments, and that whole Fantasia thing was just hilarious.
Oh yeah, especially when Pam stole it from the other girl, woman. That was nice. Honestly, the whole sort of H Vamps thing was a bit of a letdown for me. I thought there might have been some more social commentary built into it, but there wasn't. It was just a matter of hungry vampires and they needed to be killed. So the problem hasn't gone away. I don't know if it's tying up a loose end, but if it does feel like it's starting to close that out a little bit, or bring it to a head might be a better way to put that, where there's going to be some resolution with the whole age thing, especially with Eric having it. And so I'm hoping it comes to a resolution. If he could survive the sun, hopefully he can survive a virus too.
Yeah. You mentioned the social commentary part, and I know that what some of them have been saying is that it's supposed to be some kind of allegory for the AIDS epidemic, which, if that's what they were reaching for, it took a while for it to actually start to be at least visible within the story. Because it was just kind of overwhelmed by all these other things going on, to say the least. Let's see. I mean, the other big thing that I suppose happened in this particular episode was then there was another big death. And I guess we have to all say goodbye to Alcide now.
Yes, my wife is in particular mourning over that. And I'm not proud of it. Of course, it's my own fault for getting her picture taken with him at Dragon Con a few years ago. And so, yeah, he's sort of her patron saint of the show. So she hasn't been happy that at all. But I do have to say, I was very relieved that they did not make him a vampire. that they respected his wishes as well as his distaste of vampires to not turn him, even though they could have and he would have lived. But I felt that was the right choice. It wasn't just Sookie pushing her will onto everybody else, but I think that's what El Cid would have wanted as well, so I've really felt that stayed true to the character.
Yeah, it's funny, my wife is not really that big of a fan of the show, but she's seen enough of it that when I mentioned that he was dead, she actually also eulogized his abs. So, that, yeah, that was a little uncomfortable, but there we are. let's see, what else to say about this episode? Probably not a lot. I mean, we really put it really came down to those elements that we already mentioned. So I suppose then we can move on to the next episode, and here's the promo for this one.
Pam and I are going to kill Sarah Newland.
I'm not going with you. Release me.
Are y'all throwing a party?
People are dead.
This doesn't happen in other towns.
Eric.
I'm going to die, Pam.
Jessica, can we please talk about
this? There is nothing to say!
One day soon, you'll be buried here, too.
All right, and if you could do the recap here.
Absolutely. We're still with True Blood, Season 7, Episode 5, Lost Cause. Eric and Pam go to Dallas for a fundraiser, but are also on the lookout for an elusive foe. Meanwhile, Sookie is a reluctant host for a mainstreaming party in Bon Temps. Andy carefully considers an important decision, and Bill recalls his human history.
Okay, and Nadim gave this one a 9. So there you go. What would you give it?
I'd give it an 8. I didn't think quite it was up to 9, but there were several good points about it.
Yeah, I'll split the difference with an 8.5. To me, this was...
Is
that all about?
Wow, anyway, I didn't think that much of it. Okay.
Britain's most dangerous and prolific child molester ever, Jimmy Savile, spent 11...
What is going on in the background? Okay.
Oh, my.
That wasn't the promo. But I guess that was the somebody somewhere along the lines not being happy with my suggestion of an 8.5. At any rate, Edmund, was that on your end?
I'm afraid so, yes. I clicked on a link that had automatic media attached to it. Sorry about that.
It's the bane of our online existence these days. Okay. Yeah, so at any rate, I thought that this was at least a continuation of what I feel is almost like the season finally getting back on track, or getting on track at the very least, which is kind of amazing to think then that this is the midpoint of the season. But what would you say was your highlight for it, Gary?
Pam and Eric seem to really be carrying the show for me. That was probably the most enjoyable part. The Compton flashbacks, it's not that they're not good, but they're just so late in the scheme of things that I'm really not learning more about the character than I already know. I kind of know what moral decisions he would make and not make to begin with. So to suddenly show them to me at this point, while it's cute, it's really not any sort of character discovery for me at this point anymore. So it's a little bit lost, at least on me.
Yeah, I wasn't really sure about what the point was supposed to be of those. It wasn't entirely clear. So I guess we'll have to see if they follow up on this in any way, but I do feel like maybe they're just trying to wrap up any loose ends that they perceive there might be. And certainly the revelation that Bill is also infected is an interesting one, since I have no idea how that's supposed to work. But it's really, for me, I guess the thing that was beyond just Pam and Eric, which of course was some of the best material still, was there were some really nice moments in the party that were awkward, and that's always a little bit fun to watch that happen. And just, I get a sense that... Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, I didn't expect the party either, and it did work, I thought, a lot better than I expected it to.
Yeah.
You know, I expected it to be sort of, a very somber sort of wake thing, and it ended up being a lot more, especially for Jessica.
yeah.
And, oh, what's his name? Anyway, but so no, I liked it as a framing mechanism for character interaction. It worked better than I thought. It wasn't some morose thing. They weren't in danger. It was nice to see them sort of relax. The last few times we've seen them at Merlot's, you know, there's been, you know, basically rioting almost every time, or, you know, this sort of gathering together to attack. So it's nice to, I guess, move the casual atmosphere somewhere else since Merlot's was so charged at this point.
Hmm. Very true. Very true. Let's see. I guess the only thing that was I'm a little bit wary of is, like you said, the whole Jessica thing with Jason and all of that, because it feels like, well, I understand it's kind of bringing things to a conclusion because you can get the sense that the death toll, or at least the departure toll, is going to continue to be high with only 5 episodes left. But I don't want them to continually throw in too many curves at this point, because I'd like them to at least go out on something of a good note, rather than just a messy one. And so far, the first few episodes were kind of messy, and it finally felt like they were really getting back on track. So I don't want them to get lost in their own meandering again, despite the fact that that is what the show is kind of known for.
Well, not only that, but in their attempt to continue to flashback, I hope it's... I don't need as many flashbacks as they're starting to throw into this thing, so...
Mm.
I'm hoping they, as they cameo people through, that they can hopefully do it contemporarily.
Yeah.
Word, yeah.
Close enough. I got the gist. All right. Well, then we are going to go ahead then and wrap up this discussion on True Blood with only 5 episodes left. And, before we get too far, I'm going to throw another little change in here and say, let's go ahead and cover the first quick hit that we have here, and I think it's going to be a good one for Edmund to maybe jump in on. I'm not sure if he actually got to catch up on Extant, but were you able to see this episode, Edmund?
Yes, I was.
Okay, and then if you could go ahead and do the recap for us.
Certainly, this is Extant Season 1, Episode 2, Extinct. Molly uncovers details of her mysterious pregnancy when Sam gives her an ultrasound. Also, Krieger tells Molly about his own disturbing solo mission that the International Space Exploration Agency is keeping secret.
Mm-hmm. And what would you give this one, do you think?
I will give this one a 7.5.
Okay. I'm going to give it a 7. And Nadim gave this one an 8. Nadim actually right now has a somewhat higher opinion of the show than I think Edmund and I do, but we'll go ahead and try and at least give our point of view very quickly. For me, the biggest problem with this so far is that if someone comes back from a solo space mission and is pregnant, the idea of her hiding it from her husband, and for that matter, everyone else...
Everybody, yes.
Yeah, it seems fairly ludicrous, and I'm still having a real hard time with that. That and the whole idea that her husband would be so unable to understand or even entertain the notion that his let's let artificial intelligence just run free of all constraints is a bad idea. Yeah, but it does get points, in my opinion, at least a little bit, for having Meryl Streep's daughter on, because, you know, always good to see her around. What were your thoughts? Anything beyond that you want to add?
No, I mean, certainly the whole keeping the pregnancy secret and, you know, I mean, my tongue-in-cheek take on it is that, you know, is wow, HIPAA laws have gotten really, really, really strong in the intervening years between now and then. While I do like them having cast Grace Kummer, as you said, Meryl Streep's daughter, I'm a little wary about what seems like, you know, a too obvious sort of love triangle thing that they seem to be setting up with her being the one who was helping to raise little Ethan and seems to have her designs on her husband, and you know that if they're going in that direction and don't do it with at least some subtlety, that's going to really annoy me, especially when it's people who are sort of this intelligent and mature and in these sorts of positions of responsibility. If it's just going to be a conventional he should be with me thing, I'm going to get very annoyed with that.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. That's the thing that was holding it back a little bit for me. But all right, enough about that. I would say then, Edmund, it's time for you to give us your first choice for this particular week. What do you want to talk about next?
Let's see. Why don't we move over to Falling Skies?
All right, and let's go ahead then and run the first promo.
TNT Mix Sunday. The road is filled with enemies.
What the hell was that?
Genie. But the greatest threat is closer to home.
You say you're my mother.
She'll be ours.
Falling Skies. All new next Sunday at 10 on TNT.
All right, then. And if you could do the recap, please.
Certainly. This is Falling Skies Season 4, Episode 4, Evolve or Die. The Second Mass finds a refuge in a Volm hideout, but tensions rise between humans and the Volm. Meanwhile, Tom teams with Weaver and Cochise in a search for Matt, and Anne reconnects with Lexi.
Okay, and let's see. Gary, are you up on this show?
Yeah, this episode I am.
Okay. And let's go ahead then and hear from you. What is your score for this one?
I would give this one a 7.
All right. And how about you, Edmund?
I'll go with the 7 as well.
All right. And let me just go ahead and remind myself yet again what this one is about. yeah, I'll go with a 7, dead average. So yes, this is a great example of an episode that we feel is fairly mediocre and just, dead average, like I said. Gary, what is your, do you have a highlight for this one or anything that comes?
I guess one thing I didn't see coming that I guess I should have was, Matt's friend turned out to be the, geez, what's his name? The guy who came up with the suits idea.
Okay. I don't remember his name either, but Edmund, how about you?
Yeah.
Well, I don't remember his name either, but for me, I mean the big highlight was shortly after I was bemoaning, oh great, once again we've got Pope being renegade and butting heads with a Weaver, except Weaver Jr. this time, not Weaver. Anyway, but butting heads with the son rather than with dad for once. But then he gets to run off and have his wonderful adventure where he discovers the female Pope in the form of Mira Sorvino, and that whole sequence I just really enjoyed. And it's funny. I mean, now that they are finally away from Charleston and kind of out on their own again. I'm getting weird vibes of Falling Skies trying to integrate stuff that's been happening on Walking Dead into their playbook. Not doing it anywhere near as well necessarily, but it is certainly shaking up the status quo and giving us some fun sequences like that one.
Hmm, that's true. I've always felt like they try to copy or at least mimic to some degree. Sorry for the reference there to for Mira Sorvino. But yeah, they always seem to try and be doing something close to what The Walking Dead is doing. And here again, I still feel like there are those attempts to bring in some of that Battlestar Galactica reboot mentality into this, and it just still isn't quite connecting. Neither is, at least in my mind, the whole Lexi subplot. I felt it had some promise, but it just feels like it's going in the most conventional direction possible.
I like to call it the Star Child.
Yeah, you mentioned that before, and it's not getting any better, unfortunately.
But it's still true.
It is. Yeah, but at any rate, I thought it was funny that it's sitting here saying it's a Volm hideout, and there's tensions between the humans and the Volm, and that's probably the thing about this entire episode that I remember the least about. I remember it more for the revelation that Weaver had about his daughter, and then the female Pope, as you said, Edmund, which was memorable. I didn't realize at first that it was Mira Sorvino. All I realized is that I think that both my wife and I, after about 10 seconds of her on screen dealing with Pope, said, "We like her." It's like, finally, a character we like. So there we go. All right, then, we're going to go ahead and run the promo for the second episode. Here it is.
He's looking for you, Tom. Take no prisoners.
They deserve whatever they're going to get.
Tell me how to save her!
And take a stand.
Go for a ride?
This fight...
I want to know what you did to my son.
...is about to get brutal. Falling Skies, all new, Sunday at 10.
All right, and Edmund, if you could do the honors again.
Absolutely. Season 4, Episode 5, Mind Wars. Tom encounters two enigmatic strangers who attack his family, then lead him on a violent odyssey. Meanwhile, Hal tries to find a safe place for the remaining Volum in Second Mass, and Lexi and Anne clash, triggering perilous consequences.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And, Gary, you kind of alluded that maybe you didn't get to this one yet?
No, I did not.
Uh-huh. You may not be too sad about that. Edmund, how about you? What did you think of this one?
Yeah, this, well, see, rating-wise, I will go with a 6.5.
All right, and I think I'm going to have to do the same, if only because I kind of almost don't remember what happened in the episode. Other than, once again, we've got this whole Battlestar Galactica reboot slash Walking Dead thing happening.
Yes.
Even more so because we have one of the cast of Battlestar Galactica as a guest star.
Yes, and they're all walking along a railroad track.
Yes. It was eerie how much it felt like it was just trying to mimic one of those episodes. Yeah. Anything else you want to add other than that? Because really, this felt like, I don't want to say filler per se, but it was pretty damn close.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, it was the you could see the intent on the writers, but the fact that it was so clear, it was one of those cases of just bad writing in terms of trying to explore these family dynamics and sort of father issues and the dynamics between the two brothers and of course, I mean, you know there was the other Walking Dead reference of little Matt becoming Carl and finding out whether or not he could shoot someone in cold blood. And unlike Carl, it turns out, because it's Falling Skies and is more of a family show, as we know, that no, of course, Matt can't quite do it, as Colonel Weaver, of course, knew he wouldn't. So, it was one of those cases of putting Tom in this supposed danger, which you knew really wasn't going to be danger in the end. So, and this was, and certainly in terms of Lexi and the whole Magic Village, I mean, this was just continuing along the same vein, the whole revelation that yes, lo and behold, Anne was in fact quite violated when they were all strung up in that Sveni ship all those many years ago now, it feels like, and in fact I think it has been in broadcast time anyway, was not really a huge revelation, but yeah, I mean, this is a case of where with all of these, with both of these episodes, the ratings were more because there were certain parts that worked better than others, and yeah, it's the whole Lexi subplot is the one that's just really dragging everything down for me now.
Mm. Yeah, and it's unfortunate because it didn't have to go that way, but this is Falling Skies. We can't have everything that we want. That has been clear from the first season. And I am constrained to point out that talking about Extant before we talked about Falling Skies makes a lot of sense because both shows executive produced by Steven Spielberg.
Yes.
And as one would expect, family dynamics are at the very heart of the whole thing, and those are the weakest parts of the show. well, what can you do? All right, that being the case, we're going to go ahead.
Just as a side note, both good and bad news, they have been renewed for another season. and the good news is it will be the final season.
Yes.
Exactly.
mercifully, I suppose, would be one way to look at it. But at any rate. All right, let's go ahead then. We're going to have our mid-show break, and then we'll be back with, we'll have to find out. Stay tuned.
Meet me after dark again, and I'll hold you. I am nothing more than to see you there.
right. Well, before we get too far, once again, I want to insert at least some of the quick hit content in. This time, it's a new show that came out, and I'm not sure that anybody else was able to catch this one or even knew that it existed, which is kind of odd, because when you look at the description, it is kind of right up the genre alley. But at any rate, this one was on Lifetime, of all things, as we continue to see these basic cable networks trying to come up with their own original programming, to better or less success, as the case may be. But in this case, we have The Lottery, Season 1, Episode 1, Pilot. A dystopian future is driven by a global fertility crisis. In the opener, Dr. Allison Lennon fertilizes 100 eggs and convinces the president to hold a national lottery to see who will carry the prized embryos to term. Unfortunately, a battle over the control of the embryos begins. And boy, does that recap kind of not quite match what happened in the pilot episode, but
yeah, that's not quite. Okay.
As I like to call it, Children of Men, the TV show. But not necessarily in a bad way. It sounds like, Edmund, you got a chance to check this one out.
I did, although, as you said, it kind of snuck under the radar. And, of course, like just about every interesting drama in this summer, they decided to put it on Sunday night. So when I added it to my queue, it wound up getting, I think it's currently getting recorded on the Monday repeat because there's too many other things on in the same time slot.
Yeah.
But,
not surprisingly.
Yeah, I was actually quite pleasantly surprised with this. I would actually give it a 7 for a pilot episode.
It was certainly better than the typical one. I went with a 6.5 personally, but that's because I'm still not sure if this is a sustainable type of premise or where it's going to go. I'm a little bit worried because the only other show that I'm aware of that they've made recently that's even remotely genre-related is this Witches of East End show, which is more notable for the fact that it is celebrated, would be one way to put it, as almost in the same vein as Showgirls is celebrated.
Oh.
The post episodic mockery on the interwebs for Witches of East End is enough to give me pause for any new show that's on Lifetime, but The Lottery seems to be doing a bit better. So it at least had a good, strong start. But Gary, it is now your turn to return us to one of our more in-depth topics, possibly, maybe. We'll see. Where do you want to go from here?
I'd like to go to The Last Ship.
All right. And again, two episodes, so here's the first promo.
TNT next Sunday. The Last Ship is all new.
DCA, what is the status?
The engine is piping hot.
And their mission.
Without any water, people start to die.
Takes a turn.
Got 10 more down.
Our entire mission is in that case.
For the worse.
I have to say this, sir. We'll kill our crew.
The Last Ship. All new TNT next Sunday at 9. Or watch on demand.
All right, and if you could do the recap, please.
Absolutely. We're talking about Season 1, Episode 4. We'll get there. Chandler's leadership is put to the test when the ship's propulsion system is in danger of breaking down. The crew becomes overworked and exhausted, and Dr. Scott could potentially lose all of her research on the virus.
Okay. And let's see. What would you give this one, do you think?
I would give this one an 8.5.
All right. And how about you, Edmund?
I think I will go with a 7.5.
All right. And I'm actually more with you on this one, Edmund, with a 7.5 as well. A little bit of a backslide on my end, but it sounds like, Gary, you really enjoyed it.
When am I going to get somebody that likes my shows on this show? Anyway, where's Brad? Someone, I need him. Anyway. I liked it. I realize it was a little kitschy at moments, but I enjoyed the creative problem solving that they brought up. It wasn't quite MacGyver completely, but there were tiny bits of it. They were running the engines for small amounts of time. They shot out those sails to get electricity going again. They came up with a way to keep the samples refrigerated to the right temperature. So I thought it was a lot of fun. Some of the discussions with the second scientist, what conditions that he'd get to work with the female doctor again were nice. I enjoyed Alec Baldwin's heart-to-heart conversation with him in the room. I thought it was full of win for me. I really couldn't see much bad for it. What were your guys' criticisms?
Well, keeping in mind that it still came in above average, so I don't know that it's so much of a criticism, but I thought that it was just a little bit less... It was a little slower paced than some of the other episodes, and it felt like some of the situations and the resolutions were a little forced, but not in a horrible way. It was still more than watchable. I think that Edmund and I talked about this last time, and I don't remember, Gary, if you had a chance to be in on that, but this show is probably the surprisingly strong show of the season. The one that probably sounded the most ludicrous on paper and yet has wound up being the more consistently entertaining show. And you can quibble on quality here and there, but certainly it has been a step above a lot of the other shows that were probably more promoted, to say the least, when you think of shows like Extant and so on. But Edmund, what would you add to this? I mean, do you have any other reasons why you felt like this was a bit of a drop back towards the average mark?
Yeah, well, I think it was as much as I did appreciate the problem solving. Some of it was sort of stretching my suspension of disbelief a little bit too much. I mean, not so much the stuff with the engines, but more with the virus that given the conditions they were in, the fact that with all those transitions back and forth that they did actually manage to preserve it. That just was stretching it a little too far for me. But as you say, I mean, not enough for me to trash the episode. That was just the part that I was having more trouble accepting than the rest of it. I guess for a show like this, when getting a little slower paced, it does feel more like it was just losing a little bit of momentum, because this is not the sort of show where you're going to have where you're going to be taking that break a few episodes in to get into more in-depth character stuff, because that's not really what they're here for. So I think it was a break that could have worked better on a different type of show, but for me it just felt like it lost a little bit of steam, just to torture a ship pun.
Okay, yes, just a little bit. But that brings us to the second episode that we're going to talk about here, and let's go ahead and run that promo.
Next Sunday, the last ship is all new. A dying world.
Welcome to my jungle.
So you have a ship with guns and men? Then do something!
And a fight.
We cannot leave those people like that.
To the death.
We came to hunt.
The last ship. All new TNT next Sunday at 9, or watch on demand.
All right, and if you could.
Absolutely. We're talking about The Last Ship, Season 1, Episode 5, El Toro. A mission to help Rachel with her vaccine trials leads Chandler and a small team into the jungles of Nicaragua, where they tangle with former drug kingpin who will stop at nothing to maintain his power over his oppressed society.
Okay, and let's see. What would you give this one?
I would give this one an 8.
Okay, and Edmund, how about you?
I will give this one an 8.5.
All right, and I will go with Edmund again on this one. For me, I like this quite a bit more than, well, not quite a bit, but certainly more than the previous one. Edmund, why don't you go ahead and take the lead on this? What were your highlights, do you think?
Yeah, well, the whole idea of them doing this this whole trip inland and running into doing their a kind of mini Heart of Darkness routine of discovering the encampment and the crazy malevolent guy running it as I've just referenced a couple of things there, is a bit of a trope, but I thought they pulled it off quite well. I also liked that he wasn't just a complete Marlon Brando type nutso, he was able to figure out enough to keep the ship at bay, working out the flares, and And I liked the way they were playing with the whole idea of the mission versus what's right. And even though, yes, you knew they were going to turn around, but the fact that it actually did become a discussion of, no, we've got what we came for, and we need to keep focused on that. But setting it up well enough so that you just knew that everybody's going to shake their head and say, yeah, we've got to go back. And as this show has demonstrated before and demonstrates again, they do action and military tactics very well. And in this case, this is exactly what I was referring to at the beginning, because that trip down the river looked almost exactly like the Central American mission that Strike Back was on in its first two episodes of their past season. So, except in this case, luckily the drug lord did not have missiles that he could rain down on them to try and take the boat out. So.
Gary, rebuttal, or are you good?
I'm pretty good with that. Yeah, I thought he was going to be a lot more cliched than El Toro turned out to be, which was nice. They pulled it off better than I expected from the promos, so I was happy. I was happy with that. I still really though have to question going back. I understand why they did it, and I mean they rationalized it well enough for the show. But you know, given what's at stake, why would they go back? They need every person they can on that ship until it's solved. So I really had to scratch my head a little bit.
Hmm. Okay. I guess what I could sum up some of my thoughts on this one. I agree with all the really good points that were there. What just felt a little bit odd was that this almost felt like the last ship meets Burn Notice. El Toro could have easily been someone that they ran into.
A drug kingpin that they had to overthrow? Yep.
Yeah, and it might have almost resolved itself in exactly the same way, which, take that for what you will. And then I'll also play a little bit of the Bronze Thumb card on this one and say, is the last ship starting to remind a little bit, in some very odd ways, of Crusade? In the direction that it seems to be going, because they're talking about potential cures for this virus a lot earlier than I thought that they would, and I could easily see this being less about curing and saving the world with this virus cure, and more about being on the forefront of the restoration in the aftermath.
Well, I don't think they're talking about it too early, honestly. I mean, sort of the show pretty much opened with them actively working on a cure even before the global pandemic took place. So I don't think it's that much of a stretch, much less so than was the case in Crusade.
How about you, Edmund? You starting to see any parallels here?
Yeah, I mean, I can see the possibility for it. I mean, it would be a nice surprise, though, especially for a basic cable show that is setting itself up at the beginning, at least, as a very conventional patriotic sort of attitude towards things. But if that I'd be very interested to see them go in that direction of yes, get it cured and then start digging into but how did this happen and what nefarious forces were at work, and looked at in that lens. I do see certain little hints that they may be dropping in terms of the sort of independent thinking that they're exhibiting, and a certain perhaps a growing distrust of major powers that be and authorities. So yes, I could see it going that direction, but I can see it going both ways. But I would be very interested to see it go there.
Yeah, I guess what prompted that thought in my head was the fact that, along with Falling Skies being given its fifth and final season, the last ship, not at all surprisingly, was renewed for its second season. And I was thinking, well, okay, if it was a one season show, I could kind of see it going along the same course because it is based off of a novel, from my understanding. But sooner or later, they're going to have to deviate from that, and I see it happening sooner. But we'll see. I mean, it all depends on. This just feels like a starting point to something more, but I have no idea if the will is there to do that or not. We'll see. We'll find out, since it has been renewed, and this show at least is performing well enough to keep our attention. All right, well, as we get close to wrapping up this show, I want to go ahead and cover the last of our quick hits for this week. And this one, I believe, is going to be mostly in Edmund's court. So, Edmund, if you could please.
Absolutely. This is Masters of Sex, the season 2 premiere, Parallax. Season 2 begins with Masters dealing with the ramifications of his disastrous presentation and being fired from the hospital. Meanwhile, Libby urges Masters to get another job, and Virginia fights off advances and innuendos stemming from the belief that she was the woman in Masters' explicit film. And this was a very strong premiere. I will go with a 9.5 right out of the gate.
Ooh, boy. Yeah. Wow, okay. That's explosive.
That's not much room for improvement.
This was really one of the stronger returns, and especially for a sophomore season where they'd ended on a note that could have been a little problematic to come back from, and really nailed it. So some very interesting stuff going on in the writing and direction. Notably, they have Michael Apted, the of course famous movie and documentary maker, of course. So the ongoing 7-Up, currently at 56-Up series, has returned. He's directed the first two episodes, actually, and they did some very interesting stuff. It's called Parallax because they were really playing around with the timelines and jumping back and forth a bit to both the events directly following his rainy doorway confession that he really needs Libby, to then what's going on months afterwards, and doing it in a way that wasn't confusing, that did let you eventually connect the dots and fill in what had happened, and a couple of those scenes where they're shown a couple of times, but one more from his perspective, one more from her perspective, just to highlight some of their differences in how they feel over the way this relationship is developing, both in the work sense and the sexual sense, because they have now started their affair in earnest rather than just pretending it's just for the study. But then circling back, and because neither of them are ready to commit emotionally yet, eventually circling back to that, yes, we're having an affair, but it really is kind of just for the study. So it was both pushing things forward and at the same time reinforcing some of the issues and problems they had in the first season in a very interesting way.
All right. Well, there you have it then. A strong return for a show that, we're going to have to see how that pans out this summer. And, of course, we have still, here's the thing that's really odd about the summer. We still have shows that are premiering. We're halfway through the summer, and we're still getting shows that are premiering. So there will be more to come in the near future. Until then, we're going to wrap this one up, and we'll be back next episode with more of the bigger topics.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google+, under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates. But let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.